Hey, folks, it's Tony Russo, and this week we're going to have an episode that we've been calling State of the Beer. When I can, interview brewers or people in the beer industry and talk to them about their jobs and what it's like to do their jobs. We've done three or four of them before, and we're going to continue to do them as often as we can. What's special about this one is it's our first live one. So this is the first time that I went out live with all my equipment, and I went to Blue World Brewing, which is in Smyrna, Delaware, and I spoke with Ronnie Price, who started the company, and does a bunch of the brewing. They've got a ton of good beer. They just started distributing in Delaware, so this is kind of a timely episode. We recorded it about a month ago in conjunction, I guess, with the release of my next book, my newest book, which is called Delaware Beer, available at a fine bookstore near you or at shorecraftbeer.com, where you can get a signed copy. Like, we can personalize for you at shorecraftbeer.com. But we went to do this live podcast, which is confusing to people because, you know, it's not something that we do a lot around here. And so I walked into Blue Earl, and I've got my speakers, I've got my microphones, I've got all these things. And people are like, hey, it's karaoke night. And so no, it's not karaoke night. We're just going to talk about beer for half an hour or so. And it went well. I mean, it went well. People were really responsive. We didn't have we had a Q&A afterwards, but nobody had any questions. It's kind of a tight-knit community there. So we had a blast, though. We had a blast. We hope to do more. As a matter of fact, if you're listening to this on Friday, June 10th, I believe I'm going to do one in Dover at Fordham and Dominion. That is scheduled, but we've kind of moved it around a little bit. So call first, make sure I'm going to be there, or just go. I mean, the beer is going to be there whether I'm there or not. And lots of great stuff going on at Ford. But for now, let's take a listen to me interviewing Ronnie Price and the State of the Beer. Welcome to sub-episode of Beer with Strangers, the State of the Beer with Ronnie Price, the owner and head brewer at Blue Earl Brewing in Smyrna, Delaware. Welcome, Ronnie.
Oh, hi, thanks.
So you guys have been here just a year, just a little bit more?
Yeah, it'll be 1 year on May 16th, our official anniversary, or that's official anniversary date, but our celebration party will be here on May 21st.
I saw that on Facebook. And what are you guys doing for your anniversary party?
So we're going to have, it's on Saturday, May 21st, 12 noon to 9 p.m. We're going to have live music with Lowercase Blues, which is
they're actually very big down by me in the Salisbury area. They're huge.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite bands that plays here at Blue Earl, and they will be here playing from 6 to 9. We have a beer, a one-year anniversary beer that we will be selling that day. It's called Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Uh-huh.
And it's a it's an old ale brewed with molasses and wood-aged.
Oh, wow.
And we'll have a food truck here. In fact, the food truck is Delicious Craving, which is they're in.
Is that the one that's outside right now?
No, actually, that's a different truck. But
well, cool. Well, we're gonna get to food trucks and we're gonna get to parties, but we're gonna start actually with molasses because molasses is a traditional, as you know, brewing additive. And what they would use
adjunct.
Adjunct, there you go. But they would use it to get the sugar from it when they had trouble getting sugar.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, it was used historically in beers, you know, back in the Revolutionary era, like George Washington. In fact, his famous recipe that you can find online, he uses molasses.
Yeah, and it was cheaper at the time because it was a byproduct.
Right. And, you know, I guess they weren't, you know, the landscape was quite different back then. So, you know, there was a lot of there wasn't very many you know, farms.
So when I was writing the book, when I was first getting started, I recounted a conversation that I had with you about the difference between, like, just enjoying beer and not and making it too hard on yourself. And one of the things that we talked about was, for instance, how we'll use Untappd. Many people will use it to kind of rate their own beers. But what we talked about was just using it to keep track of which beers you liked and which beers you didn't like.
Okay.
You don't recall the conversation. The reason that Ronnie doesn't recall the conversation is it was right before things got really hairy here at Blue World. You guys were just, I don't know if you were quite open when I spoke with you, but let's go ahead and then start. The first time I met you was at a brew festival, and you guys were Warlock Brewing, and you were homebrewing as Warlock. So how did you get started in homebrewing, and how did you get from homebrewing to Warlock?
So in 1992 is when I brewed my first batch of beer, a long time ago, but there was a friend that I worked with, Tom Johnson was his name, and he was a part of the First State Brewers Club, which had formed like a few years before that,
right?
And he was bringing home the periodicals or the monthly newsletters. He was showing them to me and turned me on to homebrewing. So I went out and bought a kit at a place called Stanton Wine Hobby, which is in Newcastle, Delaware. Brought it home, brewed up a batch of beer, fermented it in my cellar, and the rest was history. Over the years, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that I took my hobby to the next level of obsession.
Right. Now, you had a straight job this whole time. What was your regular gig?
Yeah, so I worked in manufacturing at a couple different places. I worked most recently at TA Instruments, which is the world-leading supplier of thermal analyzers and rheometers. I worked in quality control there for about over a decade. Before that, I worked other manufacturing-type quality control jobs. And so, QC is a discipline, sort of like brewing.
Yeah, and you're familiar with gadgets. You're not uncomfortable around all sorts of weird gadgets.
That's right. So I built a brew stand probably about 10 years ago or so, and started buying all kinds of pumps and chillers, and started kegging. I built a kegerator, and turn my two-car garage into a one-car garage.
You looked up for your wife when you said that.
And then my one-car garage became a no-car garage.
Right.
And then my wife, my lovely wife, Rosemary, who's sitting right across the room here from me, asked me to take my brewing hobby out to another place.
And so did you join a different club? There are a bunch of ways that people get into brewing and get into home brewing particularly, and you can always kind of tell, like, some guys like to mix with flavors, some guys like to mix with gear. Like, you seem like you really like building things. Some guys like trying different flavors. I interviewed a guy today who's just really into yeast. Like, if he can do a good yeast, then the rest of the beer. So is that true? Do you feel like you started from the gear part and then moved to the taste?
Well, cooking and it was a big pastime for me. Fusion of flavors, world cuisine. I would cook Asian style. I would go on a search and rescue mission to find out how to cook a particular Asian dish or an Eastern European dish.
So this is you're out someplace, you try something, and you're like, I have to learn to make that myself?
Yeah. So it's the same kind of thing with beer. It's the same mechanism. I would discover a beer style, and then I would good, like, I go to State Line Liquors, by the way.
Yeah, they've got all the beers.
Kudos to
God bless them.
To Robert and his guys. In fact, we just signed with a distributor there. But anyway, I would go to State Line and find a particular beer style, bring it home and pick it apart. Then I would research it. I would come up with my own recipe based on multiple recipes that I would find online.
Yeah, because everybody's willing to tell you how they did it online, but it's always a little wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you could get one recipe and give it to 10 different people, and it's going to come out 10 different ways.
Right.
Right? Would you agree with that, Tony?
Yes, I did. I did. I did agree with that. We're distracted by the pizza that has arrived.
So... but homebrewing, is for me is is a geekery. I'm a gadget guy, but I'm also into brewing beer that tastes. I don't want to use any foul language on your podcast.
You can. It's the internet. I don't know if you've seen the kind of thing that they put on the internet.
So
curse words are really like the least among them.
So you know. So if it tastes fucking good, drink it.
Right. And so that was your strategy from early on.
So yeah. So and you know it. Then you know I started studying beer judging. Started entering entering beers in competitions. So for me it was not just brewing beer, but it was everything about beer and about home brewing. I joined the American Homebrewers Association. I was a moderator on their forum. I volunteered to moderate.
And this takes a fantastic amount of time. I mean, you're still working a job and being involved. I know that a lot of the guys who are involved, and especially Duh, which is our local one, they spend a phenomenal amount of time just doing their. It's more than a hobby. It's like almost like a lifestyle, like in addition to their regular life.
That's right. You know, and I lived, breathed, and slept homebrewing. And thanks to my wife Rosemary, who allowed me to do that. I hear from a lot of guys that I can't. I'm not allowed to brew in the kitchen, or I'm not allowed to do this.
The kitchen gets a little disastrous.
Yeah, the kitchen's kind of tough, you know. You know, my daughters used to when they would come in the kitchen when they were real little, they used to come in and they would hold their nose, you know, because they didn't like the smell of it.
Right.
You know? But
it's funny. I grew up not terribly far from an Anheuser-Busch plant, and I remember just being confused by the smell of yeast until I was much older. Like, it just smelled so foul until I learned to appreciate, you know. And that's the thing, when you as you get older and as you get more inured to the different combinations of flavors and the different components of a beer, you start to get, you're like, oh, okay, I can smell how that yeast is going to make a good beer, or how that malt is going to make a good beer. And so I guess when you got advanced enough, you were able to taste it in another beer and say, you drink this beer and you're like, okay, now I know what I have to do to make this beer.
Yeah. You mentioned yeast. Yeast is there's many different types of yeast out there. Beer yeast, ale yeast, lager
right.
yeast. The Saccharomyces, Brettanomyces, Lactobacillus, which those are getting into bacteria. And every yeast behaves differently.
Right.
And learning the behavior of a yeast is a very daunting task. It takes experience. A lot of experience with working with it.
And that's like a practice experience. It's just like do it and do it and do it until you get it right.
Yes.
Or until you know what's going to happen anyway.
Yes. And, you know, they all have, they do have distinctive aromas and flavors. I mean, they lend the esters during the fermentation process to give you those different characteristics of aroma and flavor. But then their behavior too, as well.
How long they last and what temperature they thrive at the best.
Yeah, and I mean they're a living organism, so you gotta take care of your yeast.
and so you're not kicked out of the house, but it's time to upgrade. So, talk about how you started to do the Warlock thing and how you converted that into eventually becoming Blue Earl.
So, you know, it. You talk about the Warlock name, and we started actually as Smokestack Lightning.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay. So that was the original brewery name,
and
brand.
Now, when you call it Smokestack Lightning, like, I know a lot of homebrewers name their homebrewery without any intention of ever opening a brewery. That's just... You know, they call
right.
it that. So when you called it Lightning Smokestack Lightning,
right.
when you came up with that name, was that with the intention of eventually opening a brewery, or was that just what you called what you did?
No, that was actually it was my intent to open up a professional brewery at that time, and it was in August of 2012.
And how did you decide to make that leap?
Well, it was basically my frustration with my day job and with my unhappiness with what I did professionally and my desire to do more with the skills and the God-given gifts that I have.
Right. And so
that's what, hence the leap of faith.
Right. Yeah. And now this is a pretty big place. So what was the planning like? To first of all, let's go through the names and how you switch from name
okay.
to name.
So yeah. So I came up with Smokestack Lightning, and that was back in August 2012. I decided at that time that I'd had it with my day job. I'm going to start a brewery, Smokestack Lightning. It is. I'm going to write a business plan. I started my research. But I really didn't kick it into high gear until like the beginning of 2013, like really end of 2012, I should say, beginning of 2013. I ended up meeting or partnering with another local homebrewer, in fact, Scott Bieber.
Oh, I know him.
Yeah. He's still a homebrewer, but we partnered to start this brewery, Smokestack Lightning.
Right.
And he eventually decided not to continue down the road with me because of his children entering college and just the financial.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's a scary thing. It takes quite a bit. So I wrote a business plan in 2013. Eventually got a letter from a brewing company. I won't tell you their name, but their initials are Boulevard Brewing Company.
Really.
Okay, so anyway,
and they had a seasonal. Was that there?
Yeah, Smokestack Series. Yeah, Smokestack.
And they're not even an American brewery anymore. For the love of God.
Jeez. So you know that we just decided at that point in time we didn't have a signed lease or a bank note yet. We didn't have a whole lot of money invested. I bought some business cards and maybe some stickers.
Right.
So it was easy enough for us. I mean, I had to change my Facebook page because I had a Facebook page. So we decided to change the name. So at this time, I brought together my three of my friends had invested money into Smokestack Lightning at the time.
Right.
They were investing. They pledged the money. We weren't.
They said, when you're ready, we've got a check for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So I brought together my team, my wife, my friends, and some other folks that were close to me in regards to trying to get this brewery going. And we went through a name search. And I actually did a poll. I did a Survey Monkey.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And we ended up with Warlock. Warlock Brewing Company.
Right.
Yeah.
And you guys were like that for a while. You had shirts. I remember it was, I guess, at the Good Beer Festival. It had to be 2014.
Okay.
You had gear.
I remember that.
You had
yes.
like bowling shirts that said
yes.
Warlock on them, and yeah. you were ready to go. And then what happened?
So this time around, we were serious. We it was taste the magic,
Right.
For those of you out there in the great wide world of the interweb that don't know me, I'm a longtime musician. I'm a music aficionado. Music and beer and culinary arts is just my trifecta. So Warlock, that's kind of like boo,
right. Yeah.
It's horror. It's or scary. It's kind of like, okay, what are we going to do with this? Well, we thought we could do a lot with it, but
right.
it's really not what I'm about. So anyway, I'll come back to that. So
as it turned out, it didn't matter whether or not you were interested.
It didn't matter because we went and we applied for a trademark. We got pre-approved, and then there was a brewing company.
What were their initials?
And their initials were Southern Tier Brewing Company. So they have a beer called Warlock.
Right.
And they came out with that beer literally the same time that we came up with our name.
Right.
And they did not have a trademark registration. Shame on them. And when we got pre-approved, well, let me just tell you, that was like pouring gasoline on the bonfire. They They came after they came after us with a vengeance, and it would have costed us way more money than it would have been worth to
cost you for the bowling shirts for sure.
So at that point, and we had not signed a lease at this time. Well, actually, yes, we did.
The lease for the place that we're in now.
Yeah.
All right.
We did. But we ended up switching the name 3 months after we signed the lease. And we switched the name in January of 2015. Again, another Survey Monkey.
Right.
Probably about twice as many people were involved at that point.
Well, because it got to the point where everybody's like, where's Ronnie's beer? I mean, I was part of that contingent where they're like, we just saw it.
Yeah.
We should be drinking this by now.
So we came up with Blue Earl. I mean, there were several names at play. And Blue Earl, and I'll tell you the story of Blue Earl. I give my brother-in-law, Bob Daugherty, credit for the name. He and I would sit on my back porch and drink beers from, you know, around, you know, local beers or world
right.
beers, whatever. And one night he said, Ron, he said, why don't you name your brewery Blue Earl? And so I said,
now what's the significance?
Well, the significance is my musical background. I played in blues for a couple decades.
Right.
And my middle name is Earl. So, hence Blue Earl.
It rolls off the tongue way better than Blue Ronnie, so.
Yeah, there you go. and as you look around the tasting room here, you see instruments hanging on the walls. We have live music every weekend, Friday and Saturdays. We have an open blues jam on Sunday.
Yeah, and you participate often.
And I play bass for the host band on that. So anyway, with Blue Earl it was, and so we changed. You know, we rebranded, and let me tell you, going through three name changes is not fun. It's no easy task. It sucks.
Right.
Okay. You know, I encourage anyone out there that's trying to come that wants to name their brewery or even their home brewery, do your homework, spend the time. Google search, go to the USPTO website, do a trademark search for wine, beer, and spirits,
right.
Cider. I don't care. Learn how to do it. It's easy to do, and if you are.
I'm sorry, but the point of it is that it's that's what held you up. Your beer was fine.
Oh yeah.
You know, a lot of the brewers I talked to, they're like, well, I was trying to get the beer right. Your beer was right. You just didn't have a something to put on the label.
That's right. You know, we did have beer brands that we wanted to produce, and we had a signed lease. We had a facility. We were under construction. We were nearing the finish line. We were 2 months away from a certificate of occupancy,
yeah,
and from brewing beer, and we had our federal alcohol license approved,
right?
Our state license was approved. I was waiting
just for a name to put on the
board. So,
and now let's talk for a minute about bringing Rob on, because his story is a book within itself.
Yeah, Rob's out there. He's minding the brew kettle, but we can get Rob out here.
Well, no, you can talk about him, but Rob Pfeiffer.
Yeah, Rob Pfeiffer.
Rob Pfeiffer was at Twin Lakes.
Yes,
and making one of the fantastic pale ales in the region, and
that's the Greenville
it.
Pale Ale. Yes.
Yeah.
Rob is my right hand man,
and fortunately fortunately for you, unfortunately for them, they kind of came apart right when you were gearing up to get very serious.
Yeah, and you know, Rob and I are brothers from other mothers. We've been friends for well over a decade, and we're both musicians. We were both homebrewers. And we both owned home inspection businesses.
That's crazy.
How can you find that combination anywhere?
No, but I guess I challenge you
to do that.
You got all the construction done real cheap, at least.
Yeah. So, but Rob's our head brewer, and I mean he works with me. We work side by side. We brew, you know, all the beer here. I do all the small batch stuff, and he and I work together on all the big batch beers. So, and then my brother Jamie Price, my younger brother, he works here as well. And Jamie's our seller. He's our seller man. I'll tell you what. I trained him, and he does a hell of a job. So.
And now this is a very, very big space. It was very ambitious because the first time I came, you had just a little tiny brew house and a great huge open space. And then you started filling it in with tanks. So talk about how quickly you grew once you guys got open.
Well, you know, so we started brewing beer in March. It was very end of March when we got our certificate of occupancy. Maybe actually it was April. The beginning of April of 2015, we started brewing on Little Earl. And Little Earl is a 1.5-barrel small batch pilot system. And it was actually the brew stand that my Brutus 10 stand that I had when I was a home brewer. I brought that
really?
Here. But, of course, I had to upgrade the kettles because I had 15-gallon Blickman kettles. And there was no way I was going to brew on those here. That would not supply the demand for the tasting room that we have here. So I went out and bought some 1.5-barrel stout tanks, okay? And so we started brewing small batch, and we were brewing like 3 times a week. We had 6 fermenters. We still have them. We have 5 1.5-barrel and 1 3-barrel fermenter. We brewed on that system while our Big Earl system was on order and on the slow boat from China. I no pun intended.
No, I in the book I talk about. Al Stewart had to wait like he had a Peter Austin system, and it was actually stuck in customs because they couldn't make heads or tails of why anybody would be bringing this into the country. So he had to wait for it. That was, but I guess the difference for you is that the demand was growing. So you were kind of caught up in the wave that you had started ahead of.
Yeah, I mean we created a lot of pent-up demand before we started. In fact, anybody out there that has a startup right now that does not have a Facebook page or does not have a website because they don't want to do it for whatever reason, I think you're making a big mistake.
Yeah, people were certainly ready by the time you were ready to get open.
Get your name out there.
And now, you didn't start bottling right away, but you started bottling pretty quickly, after 6 months or so?
Yeah, we started bottling in December of 2015. We were doing some small batch stuff with a Blickman beer gun.
When I was here for that part.
We had our first release, Rock Me All Night Long, which is a whiskey barrel aged Russian Imperial Stout collaboration with Painted Stave.
Right.
And That came out in November, and then in December we started bottling. We bottled Walking Blues IPA was our first flagship.
That's a good
brand.
Beer. That's a solid beer.
Thank you. Yeah. So, and then we just released Honeysuckle Rose, which is a Belgian style blonde ale,
which I'm drinking right now. Also very well done because it's not real. It's not as sweet as sometimes you're afraid that they're going to be.
Yeah, it's very drinkable for 7.2% alcohol, and I'll tell you, it's very deceiving. But it's a nice, got a nice honey like sweetness, a little bit of orange citrus notes into it,
and drier also than you might expect.
Yeah, it's got a nice Belgian-y character to it from the yeast. We use an Abbey ale strain, so, but yeah, we're bottling that. And anybody that's been on Facebook, if you look at our page, we have a post pinned to the top, a picture of all the brands that we've released in our first year here, and it's pretty impressive.
And now getting out and about, do you have an outside salesperson? How do you get your brewers? How did you get your beer, for instance, into State Line Liquors or any of these?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask. We're actually hiring a salesperson right now. We're in the midst of that.
Right.
But we have done all of the sales. We have a sales task force. It's about 4 of our investors and myself.
Uh-huh.
And we've been going out selling beer. Each of us spends like 1 day a week selling. And we've done a pretty good, damn good job of doing it because we have 2 distributors now. And we're keeping up. But We're looking for a full-time salesperson right now, so if you have some craft brewing experience, a craft beer sales experience,
right.
I should say, or if you've worked for a distributor, please check us out. Check out our website. We have an a job posting there, and you can send your resume and your letter of intent to social media at blueworldbrewing.com.
Very cool. And we're going to get ready to wrap it up here. So what do you see coming for you guys in the coming year, the next year or so? What do you expect to be doing here?
So this year is our first year is up. Our second year, we will be releasing two more year-round brands and at least two seasonals in a bottled form, a 24-12 format. So basically six packs, 12-ounce bottles.
Right.
We're gonna have small batch releases, one a month, every
month.
Those
are always so popular. People come out for those.
Oh yeah,
and they look forward to them.
Yeah, so we'll have those. Yeah, and we've done so well with those. I can't tell you how proud I am of all the small batches, and what they and the amount, the level of just interest they generate.
Yeah.
So we're going to be continue to put those out every month, and we have a lot more activities or events going on this year. We're going to do our Blue Soul Fest in October, which is we're going to get an extension of premise and do it outdoors this year.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so we're going to have six bands, several food trucks. We'll be selling tickets on TicketLeap.com, and it's going to be a beer, food, and music festival, Blue Soul Fest.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, folks, we're getting ready to wrap it up here. Does anyone have any questions for Ronnie on his odyssey here? The brewer's taking questions. Any questions for the brewer before we wrap it up for this evening? Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And if anybody's interested in hanging out with me or buying a couple books, we have the books up here, Delaware Beer by Tony Russo. That's me. It's a story of brewing in Delaware from the recent past. Some of the distant past, but our friend John Metcalf did the really best part of the history bit. So I did the fun cultural stuff about the beer gardens and places like this. So thank you very much. Have a great night.
Ooh. Thanks, Tony.
Beer with Strangers is recorded at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware. For more information about the show and for beer news and commentary, visit stateofthebeer.com, where you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow along on whichever social network you're least likely to ignore. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.